The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, and it's about things that happened a while ago, but it might be something that you're interested in. Movies for Grown-Ups shines bright and helps us fight against ageism. For more than 20 years, we've been pushing Hollywood to reject time-worn stereotypes. This is from AARP, the magazine. This year's Movies for Grown-Ups Awards ceremony had to be postponed because of the Los Angeles wildfires in January. But on Saturday, February 8th, a game and glittering crowd of actors and filmmakers gathered at the Beverly Wilshire in L.A., for the rescheduled event. We have been dressing up and putting on this annual celebration of older artists and filmmakers for more than 20 years, aided in recent years by PBS, which broadcasts the show on February 23rd. You can stream it for free on the PBS Passport app until May 31st. Oops. Demi Moore, Jodie Foster, Adrian Brody, and June Squibb were among the actors honored, breaking down stereotypes about youth, beauty, and cinematic creativity. Google their ages if you like, and you'll find a span of more than 40 years, from Brody, who turned 50 in April, to Squibb, who's 95. The winning films ranged from the age-proof Wicked to the nostalgic Bob Dylan biopic, A Complete Unknown. Proceeds raised at the event for our charitable affiliate, AARP Foundation, will support local, on-the-ground organizations helping affect families and communities recover from the wildfires. So many wise words were spoken that day. AARP's new CEO, Dr. Miyakia Minter-Jordan, set the tone when she noted that the intergenerational film, Thelma, had given Squibb the first leading role of her 70-year career. At AARP, Minton Jordan added, "One of our top priorities is taking the rising problem of fraud, which is at the heart of the movie, Thelma." Joan Chen, 63, who won Best Supporting Actress for Dee Dee, gave us a poetic shout-out. AARP minds us that aging is something to embrace, a badge of honor, actually. As the author of The Little Prince put it, in spite of decoys, jolts, and ruts, you have continued to plod like a horse drawing a cart. And I'm so fortunate I am still here, still drawing my cart. Beneath the glamour of the show was something more profound: our ongoing efforts to combat age discrimination in the shows and films Americans watch. In a recent AARP study, more than half of respondents told us they wanted to see more positive representation of older adults. We want that too. Older audiences and older actors deserve it. Nobody said it better or more pithily than Career Achievement winner Glenn Close, 78, "I'm still here, raring to go." Now moving on to another issue of the magazine, an article that we started reading last time, Shock, Betrayal, Disaster, Three True Stories of Resilience in Financial Crises. So last week we read one story, this week we'll read another, and then next week we'll read the third. Till Debt Do Us Part, A 32,000 Mistake Was Only the Beginning. For Mary Anderson, the first sign of trouble was a background check. Working at U.S. Bank in Minnesota in 2015, she had access to federal government accounts. So it was important to verify she didn't have any financial problems in her life that she might try to solve with other people's money. But Mary had nothing to hide. To her surprise, however, the examiners told her they had found $32,000 in bad credit card debt. Most of it was on a card Mary held jointly with her husband, a card she thought had been closed years before. She went home and told David, her husband of 24 years, what had happened. David, a sales manager at an auto dealer, seemed just as confused as she was. It had to be a mistake, he insisted. We have a common last name, she reasoned, but the bank's investigators assured her there was no error. They had the right Mary Anderson. Each day she went to work, scared to death that she was going to be fired for not revealing this supposed debt. Each night her husband shrugged his shoulders. Finally, about 5 days later, David caved. 6 years earlier, the couple had added a new kitchen and family room to their starter home. Costs had gotten out of control, he told her. He had put the expenses on joint credit cards, but did not pay the balance. Once Mary explained the situation to her employer, she was able to keep her job. But the experience was humiliating. A woman responsible for guarding against financial hanky-panky at the office was oblivious to a huge money problem at home. For many years, he was making more money than I was, so it seemed to make sense for him to handle the money and the bills, Mary says. Unlike her, he was able to come home during the day and intercept any bills in the mail. She had occasionally seen odd notices about their mortgage and unpaid bills, but he would tell her it was all taken care of. I trusted him to handle the finances, she said. A few months later, she tried to withdraw money from a savings account she had long held at a local bank. Instead of the $8,000 she expected to find, the account was empty. David had withdrawn the money. She doesn't remember his response to her questions about where the money had gone. It was tough to pull information out of him, she says. The financial dominoes continued to fall. In the summer of 2019, she received a notice that the state was garnishing her wages. I called David and asked him about it. He said, "It must be a mistake." In an empty hallway in her office, she huddled in a corner and sobbed. After Minnesota's Department of Revenue confirmed she owed unpaid taxes, Mary, suspecting more bad news, called the IRS. A customer service agent told her that she and David owed $40,000 in back taxes. "How is this possible?" she asked. "We don't make that much money." "Honey," the representative answered, "someone is lying to you." David, it turned out, had cashed in his retirement account and an old one of hers, worth $24,000. He had failed to report some of his income, and he had hidden years of IRS correspondence demanding payment and penalties. Where was the money going? "We got into a situation where we were spending more than we had on both sides," David said. "To maintain it and not draw attention, I made some unwise choices." As for the timeline of events that Mary recalls, he says, "I have nothing that I'll dispute. It's mostly true." But he adds, "It's deeper than just money. There were mistakes. I made some, she made some. We should have had better communication." Mary, who was 49 when she learned of all these secret debts, couldn't bring herself to leave David. One stumbling block was that she didn't think she could afford it. Another was religion. "I was raised Lutheran," she says. "To me, divorce was wrong." Instead, they agreed to sell their house. The home equity they'd accumulated was enough to pay their back taxes. They started all over with a clean slate. And this time, she would pay meticulous attention to the money. They separated their bank accounts and credit cards, and she started regularly pulling her credit report to make sure nothing was amiss. Yet, living in their rented townhouse, Mary was still miserable, married to a man she was no longer trusting. She had always been a runner, but when her runs didn't ease her stress, she started training for an Ironman triathlon, a race comprising a 2.4-mile swim, a 112-mile bike ride, then a full 26.2-mile marathon. People would say to me, "Training takes so much time. Don't you want your time back?" Mary remembers. "But it took my mind off of all the other things in my life that were not going right." Her debut Iron Man in Madison, Wisconsin in September 2022 ended poorly. Near the end of the cycling segment, heavy rain and a hilly course made braking dangerous. I didn't feel safe on the course, she said, so I stopped. 2 weeks later, she signed on to the IRS website and saw that she and David were another $16,000 in arrears, this debt dating back to 2019. She picked up the phone and called an attorney. I can't live like this anymore, she said. The divorce was finalized a few months later, but the couple continued to live together until May 2023, when their lease was up. Mary moved into a studio apartment that she describes as not New York small, but small enough. That September, she suited up once again for the Ironman in Madison. 16 hours and 24 minutes later, she crossed the finish line. Though she was near the back of the pack, completing the Ironman felt like victory. Everything I overcame financially, everything I had gone through to get there, it was the best thing ever. Mary came away from her divorce with about $200,000 in a 401k and a $150,000 inheritance from her late parents, held in accounts that, as things had turned messy, she had taken precautions to keep out of David's reach. Now 58, she doesn't see retirement in the cards anytime soon. Having left U.S. Bank in 2020, she now has a customer service job at an equipment finance company and supplements her income with work for a woman's boutique and a grocery delivery service. She lives modestly, driving a 2018 Buick wagon she bought with cash. Still, she says, it's a vast improvement over where she was just 2 years ago. I don't have the financial unknowns hanging over my head, she says. I know where my money is coming and going. And what did she learn? Lesson one, don't trust anyone with your finances, she said. You have to stay on top of them yourself. Lesson two, if you're a married couple, you both need to know what's going on, she says. If one says everything's fine, that's not okay. If your gut feeling says something is off, it's off. And finally, lesson number three, I'm stronger than I thought I was, she said. It was a wild ride. And this piece was by Jean Chatsky, a longtime financial journalist and CEO of Her Money. She writes the Chatsky to the Rescue column for AARP, the magazine. And the sidebar we have with this is rescuing your finances after a crisis. Four tips to help you recover from the damage done to your money when your life has been turned upside down. One, focus on the now. After a disaster, take an hour to write down everything that's making you anxious, advises Megan McCoy, an assistant professor of personal financial planning at Kansas State University. Once that's done, start taking care of things you have control over. After a hurricane, for example, document damage and notify your insurer. But don't waste your energy imagining catastrophic after effects off in the future. Be on guard against scams. Criminals know how to use our emotions against us. Because of that, our heightened reaction to catastrophe events, panic or regret perhaps, make us an obvious target. After natural disasters, for example, scammers posing as contractors may rush you into paying high fees for bogus or poor quality repairs. If you've lost money to a fraud, another criminal might pose as someone from the government who will help you get it back. We always encourage people not to be pressured to act fast, said Jessica Prell, advisor to AARP's fraud prevention programs. Always take time to do your research. Make a long-term plan. Once you've taken care of basic needs such as food and shelter, start developing a sustainable budget, recommends Jordan Naffa, Director of Financial Planning at Arista Wealth Management in Las Vegas. If necessary, reach out to creditors and try to negotiate your obligations based on your changed financial circumstances. And finally, practice self-care. Friends, family, and professionals can help you deal with the damage to your mental health that financial emergencies can inflict. reaching out to a support group might be helpful. Lauren Lindsay, a financial planner at Beacon Financial Planning in Houston, many of whose clients have endured multiple hurricanes, says a friend who is not going through the same trauma might give you a helpful perspective. Now let's look at the next item in our book from Psychology Now. And this chapter is entitled, What is Stress? Being under pressure is part of life, and it can help you take action, feel energized, and get results. But if you are overwhelmed, these feelings could be a problem. While stress isn't a psychiatric diagnosis, it's closely linked to mental health. Manage external pressures and develop your emotional resilience so you're better at coping, including looking after physical health, giving yourself a break, and building support networks. You're critical of yourself and others. Being anxious leads to you being hard on yourself. It thrives on the lack of self-esteem you have for yourself, and as a result, you become self-critical and critical of those around you. You can't sleep. When we're in an anxious state, it can be hard for our body and mind to relax, and we can have trouble sleeping, which can lead to bouts of insomnia. You're distracted. We may be preoccupied with our thoughts and easily distracted. Experiencing racing thoughts is common with anxiety, but this attention to the inner dialogue can result in others perceiving us as distant. You overthink. When you're anxious, you're desperately trying to make sense of a situation. Overthinking and laboring over every eventuality is a way of protecting yourself and gaining control. You're afraid to take risks. Sticking to your comfort zone means you don't have to face frustration, embarrassment, sadness, anger, or disappointment, all extreme feelings for someone with anxiety. When we're anxious, we want to protect ourselves, and we can see risks as threats, so we become risk-averse. Or you talk too much. You may be in a high-functioning state when you're anxious, meaning your mind is going at 100 miles per hour. As a result, your actions, such as talking a lot, may follow suit. You're unwilling to make friends. Opening yourself up emotionally can make you feel vulnerable and exposed. You may already be imagining losing that friendship before it's even started. Anxiety may isolate us by way of protecting ourselves from unknown territory. You feel unwell. Constant anxiety has a big effect on the immune system, and trying to hide symptoms from others can impact physical health. Anxiety can make us fatigued and even sick. Plus, adrenaline released can have a negative impact on our stomachs, as well as other parts of the body. When it's more serious, seek additional help and support if anxiety is disrupting your day-to-day activities and stopping you from doing activities you previously enjoyed. Shortcuts to serenity. These quick tips can help, so make sure you practice them every single day. A person who feels they are not worth listening to will speak quickly, because they don't want to keep others waiting on something not worth listening to. A person in authority speaks slowly. Even if you don't feel very confident, try slowing down and see how that feels. Too much to do? Write down each task you can't do right now on a separate piece of paper. Then, every other day, take a random one and do it. You'll soon get through the list. Then, learn to recognize negative self-talk. I can't run anymore. I've got to stop. Visualize it as an irritating bug. Stamp on it. Kill it. Then replace it with a positive one. Come on, I can do this. Only half a mile left. Laugh often. Watch a funny film or a YouTube video and have a good belly laugh. Science shows it helps to lower the stress hormone cortisol and can shift a low mood. You are what you do. So if you change what you do, you change what you are. Act in a positive way. Take action instead of telling yourself you can't. Talk to people in a positive way. You'll soon start to notice a difference. If you choose to say no to something, mentally rehearse the conversation beforehand, saying it simply and directly, giving no more than one key reason. Do not get into explaining or arguing. Just repeat no because. Finally and firmly and quietly. Before always saying yes to demands, take a deep breath so you can touch base with yourself to discover what you would truly, honestly prefer to do. Have a list of useful apps that benefit your mental health. Try Headspace, Stress and Anxiety Companion, and catch it. And don't aim too high. Set a goal you know you can achieve, then achieve it. You'll feel good. Now set another and achieve that. Soon you'll be getting bigger and bigger goals and achieving those too. Visualize yourself at your most confident and then link this feeling to a physical action, such as pinching your thumb and forefinger together. Next time you need to feel confident in a situation, pinch your thumb and finger together to get back to that positive mental state. Keep talking. Having a chat with a loved one, sending a text to a friend, or asking your colleague to go for a walk is the best tonic for a low mood. Stand tall and straight. That makes you feel better about yourself. Imagine a piece of string is pulling the top of your head toward the sky, and the rest of your body straightens accordingly. Immerse yourself in nature. So-called green therapy, being outdoors, is a powerful mood lifter. A Stanford University study showed that a 90-minute walk in nature reduced ruminations, which is a risk factor for mental illness. And the sidebar article here is how to be calm. If you're feeling anxious, there are ways you can step back and take control before the symptoms build up and take over. Do a breathing exercises. Breathe in through the nose for 3 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, breathe out through the mouth slowly for 5 seconds. Use a distraction technique. Try the 5-4-3-2-1 technique. Acknowledge 5 things you can see, 4 things you can hear, 3 things you can touch, 2 things you can smell, and finally, 1 deep breath in and out. Try positive affirmations. Tell yourself, I am safe, I am in control, this feeling is anxiety, and repeat until you feel more control of your feelings. Make dietary changes. Small changes to your diet can make a difference to anxiety symptoms. Try eating less processed food, drinking less alcohol, and cutting back or stopping caffeine. Don't forget that caffeine can be present in chocolate and soft drinks, too. And finally, get enough sleep. Maintain a regular sleeping pattern by going to bed at the same time each night, switching off screens at least 1 hour before bedtime, and ensuring your bedroom is dark and the right temperature. Now, moving on to AARP, the bulletin, there's several large articles about scams, but there's a sidebar article here that I'm going to read to you because we don't have time for the longer ones today. New tech tools can help stop fraud in its tracks. Scammers have never had so many ways to steal your money, especially with the rise of artificial intelligence, AI technology. But fortunately, the tools for fighting fraud are getting better than ever as well, and even more are on the way, often using the same AI technology that criminals are employing. Here are some of the newest tools that are aimed at keeping you safe. Microsoft and Theta Ray, an AI anti-money laundering company, have launched a crime detection suite that helps banks spot financial crimes so officials can stop them before customers suffer a loss. Theta Ray also recently acquired a company that helps banks screen individuals, companies, and others against international lists of people with questionable backgrounds. That allows officials to preemptively stop criminals from opening or accessing accounts without affecting legitimate customers. MasterCard has been investing in AI and other methods to detect scams. It works with banks and cell phone companies to stop thieves from opening illegitimate accounts by verifying the user's identity using a suite of tools, including behavioral biometrics. That might seem like a scary term, but in this case, it means observing small habits they might not even be aware of, such as the speed at which they type on their phone, or their typing cadence, the amount of time spent between key presses, and certain swipe patterns. MasterCard monitors these factors in mobile transactions, raising a red flag if they don't match with the person whose name is on the account. MasterCard has also recently updated its AI consumer fraud risk solution, which identifies and keeps money from being sent to scammers in real time. The program has already been rolled out to the 14 biggest banks in the UK and will expand into new markets across the globe this year. The consumer fraud risk solution monitors receiving accounts and alerts the bank if a transaction has a high risk score, helping the financial institution stop it before the scammers get their hands on the intended victim's money. A security company called Hiya, H-I-Y-A, has just launched a new technology that detects in real time, whether a voice is AI generated. It also protects against fraud calls, often stopping them before your phone rings, and then alerts you of a suspected scam or fraud. This sort of tool is especially useful for combating criminals who know how to get around call blockers. The Hiya app phone app is free to download for Android and iPhone users with premium features available via subscription for $9.99 a month. People can also take advantage of an offshoot of this tool on their personal computer by downloading a free Chrome browser extension that detects deep fakes in both video and audio clips. Companies involved in communications, whether carriers or handset manufacturers, are going to have to play a role in deploying AI for good. AI that is on the side of the consumer, because a lot of this stuff can only be detected by another machine, says Patchen Neulich, Hiya's head of marketing. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. This is Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And I do thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.